On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, Jamie West joins me to talk about political promises and swear words and whether we should all be paying equal taxes despite not having the same services. And even, can we really take a joke anymore? That and a lot of other things. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
It is Friday, which means we do a little thing here on the show that we like to call the brightest conversation in Hamilton radio. We bring on one guest who can carry the intellectual heft of a nation and talk about all kinds of things that have been going on in the world. And today, I'm telling you, when you want intellectual heft, this man is the Fat Albert of intellectual heft. He is, you can't spell Mensa without Jamie West. Actually, you can, but you know what I mean. Jamie West, podcaster, veteran broadcaster, producer.
That part you actually got right. I'll tell you.
What else? What else? The host of, well, the Jamie West Pro Media, and there's so many things on your business card. I can't remember them all. What else have I forgotten?
There's a couple of titles on there, but it's okay. I mean, it's not important. You can just call me Heft, Jamie West, intellectual Heft.
Intellectual heft, the man of heft. Yes,
that's all I want to be.
Well, let me ask you about your intellectual heft right off the bat, because you know what else today is? Today, as I said, National Beverage Day, National Nurses Day. Yesterday, in addition. So yesterday, Ben and I spent the entire day playing Mexican music for Cinco de Mayo. Somehow in that, we missed the fact that it was World Password Day. World Password Day, Jamie, is the absolute test of anybody's intellectual heft, because they tell you that every device you have, every account you have, every thing you have should have a different password so nobody can hack you. How are you doing in that department?
Well, there's too many people listening, so I'm doing just fine. Yeah.
You're not like me. You're not like me, who has one password for everything, and if one person figures it out, literally everything I own can be hacked?
I might, but who's asking? I'm saying I might, but I'm not saying definitively that that's the case. Move on.
I want to know why the people who are telling us to do this, who are the people behind the devices, can't simply come up with a system where something can't work better, where it just becomes harder to hack into stuff. Or I don't know. There's got to be this seems like, you know what this seems like? This seems like the computer printer racket. They sell you a printer for $99, but then the ink runs out in 2 weeks and it costs $100 to refill.
I don't know. We're going in the direction of facial recognition. I mean, even my Apple phone recently, will recognize me when I'm wearing a mask. They've added that.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, they will. It will. The latest upgrade on Apple is, or update is, that it will do facial recognition with you wearing a mask. And so you move your eyes and your face around in it. And so I've had that happen a couple of times where I got a mask on, and the phone will tell me, look down. And I look down and it goes in. So we've got that going on. We're, you know, any minute we're going to have fingerprint stuff. I think these days are probably heading out, but I don't know.
How often are you wearing a mask when you're working on your computer? I'm very curious now.
No. I'm talking about on my phone. My phone. When I'm out.
You're talking about like a COVID mask, not like some sort of, you know, Halloween mask while you're working at home.
Exactly. Yeah. not the gorilla mask I wear at Halloween. No. Or the Trump
mask. Just how, you know, we've been at this for 2 years, and for a moment there I had a brain fart and I wasn't thinking COVID mask. I was thinking, is he like wearing a Friday the 13th Jason mask while he's working on his computer? What's going on? I don't, anyway. Yeah. Oh, yeah, so World Password Day. So if you're out there and you have one password like me for everything, this is where they tell you to change them all into each individual one. And then, see, here's the other thing, Jamie, we got to run. Here's the other thing. I did for a while have a whole bunch of different ones. I do have, actually, that's not true. I do have more than one because I've got three or four. But of course, I've got them all written down in the same spot. So if someone finds that now, they can completely hack everything with no problem at all. Because I can't remember all these in my head.
No, that's because you're too busy outside cutting the grass all the time.
Well, that's when I should have the clarity to be able to do it. But who can remember which password you have, especially when work makes you change your password every 6 weeks or something? And then you can't, there's some things I can remember. I can remember statistics of my favorite hockey player from when I was 8 years old. I can remember my phone number when I was 5. I can't remember the password I made for my phone right after I've entered the new password. I have to write it down now while I'm doing it because there's too many passwords.
You are not alone, but I'm not like you. I really am not. That's what I'm saying on the radio, but I'm not like
you. All right. But he is wearing a mask.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Jamie West is with me for the brightest conversation in Hamilton radio here on 900 CHML. Jamie, I've heard so many promises in the last few days. I have no idea that anyone could possibly keep up with these things, nor do I have any expectation that almost any of them will even remotely be kept.
What are we getting? What are they promising? What's Ford promising besides giving me my license sticker money back? Is there something else?
Ford is promising highway construction and new homes.
We need more of.
Well, I mean, who knows what we need more, but we got that kind of construction. We've got Andrea Horvath today promising 1.5 million new homes in Ontario over the past decade, which I'm just going to stop here for a second. There are 15 million people who live in Ontario. And even if we say on average, 3 people live in each home, that means in the next 10 years, she's promising we will increase the housing stock that is built up in Ontario over decades by 30%.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen. And then you've got Del Duca saying that we're going to hire 10,000 new teachers and we're going to hire 20,000 new nurses and we're going to build new schools and on and on. And this is like the tip of the iceberg. I said this, Jamie, earlier this week, and it was when a caller called in, and it was just an idea that I had off the top of my head while we were talking, but I want to throw it out because as I got thinking about it, I thought, you know, my idea is not the stupidest thing I've ever thrown out there before, which is we should have a law in Ontario or in Canada for elections that you as a party must put all of your promises in writing. And if your promises are not kept by the end of the first year, your leader must step down. Because you know what it would do? It would force you to distill the things down that you are really believing that you can do in that year to make a difference. And then as part of your budget, every year they have a budget announcement, do a promise announcement. Here's what we're going to do next year. Rather than throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks and we forget most of it. And then we, at the end of it, go, well, they didn't do this and they didn't do this and they didn't do this because they never had any intention of doing that.
I think it's a cool idea. Can I tell you, I'm all about accountability at this stage in my life. There's hardly any accountability to be had out there. You do what you want. People do what they want. They get away with it. Nobody does anything. Nobody enforces rules. So that's why these leaders can go around making empty promises. They're not the first ones to have done that, of course.
Of course not. Of course not.
A long road leading up to this latest campaign. And it was full of empty and broken promises as well. Some have been kept. I can't think of too many off the top of my head, but what a great idea. Hold people accountable. But do we the voters care enough to go along with a great idea like that?
Yes, and I'll tell you why, Jamie. Okay. I'll tell you why, because right now when you have the leaders going around every single day making all kinds of promises, we cannot keep track. We don't know, we can't remember what Ford said or what Horvath said or what Del Duca said because we're just bombarded with them. If you made them pick their priorities and really hunker down on 2 or 3 or 4 things that they really believe they can do, we will then know who we actually listen to and who's got an idea that we like that they really are really dug into. we could figure out which party is promising what and what they stand for, as opposed to everything for everybody.
Yeah, no, wicked. I can't argue with you, and I'd love to. You know, I'd love to argue with you, but I can't in this case, because what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It just comes down to, do we as a collective electorate have the motivation, the desire to do that kind of thing? Or, you know, I look at the numbers of people that turn out in elections. They're getting fewer and fewer and fewer people turning out to vote. That signals to me that a lot of people, or the majority of people, the silent majority, are sitting back, not paying attention, and just taking whatever comes their way. And the rest of the people that vote more on personality, looks, tone, than they do on anything else. So I don't know, man. I don't know whether there is the collective desire to do what you're doing, and yet it would be the most logical and simple thing to do. But we are the ones that steer the politicians. If you just let the politicians loose and you let them debate this idea of yours in theory, and they're never going to do it, because they're in the business of BS.
Oh, they would never. There's no politician in the world that would ever go for an idea like this. I'm throwing this out there, Jamie, knowing full well that there is a minus 4,000% chance that a political party would ever agree to this.
But they should, because they're supposed to be there to serve the people. That's the underlying principle of representing your community, is service. It's not getting yourself reelected. I know that in reality, that's what it's become, but in theory, where this all began, and we could get it back there if there was a appetite for it, get it back to a place where it's considered service. And you do need to increase the accountability. I think the pendulum's gone so far the other way. I think that politicians have never had it better in their entire lives as they do now. People are so disenchanted that they're literally just giving up and saying, screw it, I'll just, you know what, let them do whatever they're going to do, because they're going to do it anyway, which is kind of a depressing thought, really.
Well, I see, it's long been a theory of mine, and I don't know if it's right, I think it is, that a huge percentage of people these days don't vote for politicians or don't vote for ideas. They vote against politicians. They hate certain people, so they don't care really who's running for them. They just hate that other person, so I'm going to vote against them, which is a cynical and negative way, which is why politics has the reputation it does right now. But if you could... This is why I go back to my point. And it's never going to happen, but I do think it's a good idea. And that is, crystallize your ideas down to a few that can absolutely be done, to the point that you're gambling, you're going all in, you're pushing all your chips to the middle, because if I can't do this, I am out. Within a year, I'm out if I don't do this. No excuses. So don't say, well, we'll do this if, or, you know, we're banking on 8% growth to be able to. No, no. You give us promises that are keepable, and we will then, and if you want to do more, sure, do more. But you know what? Don't give us all these endless things that, and every single one of the leaders so far, every single one of the leaders has been a bloviating gas bag so far. They're just throwing stuff out there that they know there is no chance will ever be done. No chance. All of them.
The few clips that I've heard, I have to agree with you that bloviating gas bags is a great descriptor, because that's what it is. They are the thinnest, most hollow, most well-worn, platitudinal type slogans that I'm hearing thrown around, that are so far past their best before dates, you know, dollar rides on public transit, like buck a beer, and, you know, all that kind of hokey nonsense. And you're right, promising everything to everyone all the time is so, so thin. I mean, and they've always got their back to your point about, you know, the accountability, and I'll pack it in if I don't, you know, live up to my promises. They've always got these excuses about, you know, the last government. Oh, we've come in and, oh, we've discovered things
of course.
Closets we didn't know were there. And all these skeletons and, oh, my goodness, it's going to take us 3 years to unravel what the last government did before we can get to our agenda. What a bunch of BS.
Yeah, no, it always happens. It always happens. It's.
I hope we learn. I know we got to run here, but I hope we learn. We don't.
No, we do have to go, and we don't learn, and we won't learn, because in all these promises, we are still, all of us to some degree, naive enough to go, oh, that sounds nice. How are we going to pay for it? Well, it'll be paid for. We got money to pay for. Until they then, of course, get, as you just said, get into office and then go, oh, you know, we've just discovered we don't have the money we thought we did because they left it in worse shape. And in some cases, that's absolutely true. But it's hold somebody accountable for something, but there is no accountability.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
And Jamie, this is a little bit of personal history, but back when I was in about grade 10 or 11, I auditioned to go to a school for the arts as an artist. I was not much of an artist. I guess there was a tiny bit of talent there, but nothing worth writing home about. Somehow I got accepted. So they thought there was something, but I didn't attend in the end. Here, though, I want to read you a couple lines from a story in the National Post today. In the pursuit of so-called equitable access, the Toronto District School Board plans to eliminate auditions and skill-based admissions criteria for its specialized schools and programs for the arts, elite athletics, and STEM, among other areas of study, and instead admit students via a random selection process where interest is the only litmus test. Whereas before, applicants had to show aptitude for their chosen field, they will now simply have to write a letter that in essence says, I love to dance or video games are fun, to enter a lottery where entrance slots are randomly drawn.
So that's what it's come down to now. That's how far out of control political correctness is, wokeness is, and everything else. This is insane.
That is insane.
The most insane thing I've ever heard. And I've heard some insane stuff.
But the idea here is we don't want to hurt people's feelings by saying you or tell them you don't have the equal opportunity because it's equity.
Sorry to jump in. I just have to.
No, jump.
Let me tell you something. If there's something that we are in desperate need of in society today, it's hurt feelings. Now, hear me out. Being disappointed, losing the game, failing at something is exactly the way that you build resilience and you learn. And we are unwilling, it seems, increasingly with this story, to allow people to not succeed, not allow them to fail. This is such a sign and symptom of how off the rails we are. We are upside down. I don't know if the pandemic did something to create this policy. I don't know what's going on. But if we don't find our way back to common sense and some discomfort so that we can know how it feels to overcome discomfort, build character, build resilience, then we're lost.
Well, let me ask you this. I can tell you for me, and maybe it's not the same for you, for me, I can tell you that all the lessons that I learned and the things that I became good at, if I've become good at anything, are the direct result of failing miserably at something to the point where I was almost embarrassed or realized how horrible I was and I'd better work at this because this is bad. It was feeling bad that made me decide to get better at something.
I'm trying to imagine my football coach, when I played in the City League back in 1980, coming in to the locker room after our team had played horribly and telling us that we did a wonderful job. Yeah, we lost, but we did a wonderful job. No. He would come in there and he would right away lay right into us about, you know, we didn't get it done because we didn't do this and we didn't do that. And his voice would be raised. And he'd get up in the face of some guys. And I was one of them. He's said, he's screaming at me, you're leaning on guys. I played the line for a while. You're out there and just leaning on guys. You're better than that. Stop leaning on guys. Start hitting people. It's football. So, I mean, was I crushed by that? In the moment, it got my attention, and I felt a little embarrassed. But guess what? I didn't want to go out on that playing field the next week and lean on people. I had an incentive to go out there, to not let my team down, to not let my coach down. My coach said those things because he believed in me, and he was hard. What is going on?
I've long thought that we were eventually going to head down this path somehow, but here's where I thought was going to happen, and now I'm sure this is going to happen. I've been wondering how it is that in school, you still have parents lose their minds about sports. I don't know why it is about certain things in sports, if their kid doesn't get the right playing time or whatever. Yeah. But I've often wondered, how is it that we get this bent out of shape about sports, but we still are allowed to have auditions for a school play and one person or two people get to be the lead? Now, based on this, if your school does Les Mis, everybody gets to be Jean Valjean. We don't have anybody in the chorus or anything else. You're all the lead. Everyone gets to be first trumpet or first violin in the band.
Based on your enthusiasm.
So as this piece in the National Post points out, and I think it's absolutely bang on correct, the real problem with this isn't even necessarily the hurt feelings, although that is certainly ludicrous. It's that the whole idea of these specialized schools was, Jamie West, you are an exceptional basketball player who has an opportunity to do something with those skills to go further in life, maybe get a scholarship, maybe because of that, get a university education you might never be able to afford. So you go to these specialized schools where you can really concentrate and have proper high-level coaching. Well, now, half the people you're going to be playing against have never dribbled a basketball before. And so how is that helping you? How is that helping them? Because now you, the exceptional athlete, are just toying with them. It helps nobody. All it does is weaken everybody. It destroys everything.
It destroys the entire concept of the specialized school or the specialized curriculum that we're talking about. It destroys the whole concept of it. It's dead in the water right there. And anybody that would accept this is nuts. I just can't believe how politics has become so much about not upsetting, irritating, discomforting, or offending anyone. That is a major problem. That is a major, major problem.
Good luck navigating
life that way, folks.
I want to give full credit to the author of this piece, who, let me get the name, Sabrina Madeau, who I think also hits on another terrific point, which is this. This is under the guise of equity. We want to make everybody have an equal chance. As she points out in this, you know what's going to happen now? Those who are now going to seek that excellence are going to be pushed into private schools where only the people who can afford it can go. So in the guise of creating equity and equality, you're actually creating a bigger two-tiered system.
Yeah, more elite. Yep.
More elite. Rather than doing something based on what your abilities are. Look, Jamie, I am okay at certain things in life. I am terrible at other things in life.
Yep.
All right. I don't believe that I have to be considered the best at everything, because I know that I stink at a whole lot of things. I know I do. So
the
things that I'm good at, why can I not be rewarded for the things I'm good at, and you be rewarded for what you're good at, and someone else be rewarded for what they're good at? Why do we all have to be good at the same thing?
And it's not, and it doesn't matter. For example, I'm enthusiastic as all get out, or as we say, or as you hear all the time, passionate. The most overused word in the English language these days is passionate. I'm passionate about playing the guitar, but I'll tell you something, I'm not good enough to be in the Rolling Stones anytime soon. Like, you have to face where you're at. I can be as enthusiastic as possible. I can be as interested as this article points out, as can be, to be lead guitar in the band at this school. But if I don't have the skills to be a lead guitarist, then I'm relegated to play in the triangle like I used to. And that's how it goes. Unless practice and learn more. I don't know.
We're way over time here, but tell me one thing. How is it fair that when I was at school, and I was terrible at math, part of the reason I got into journalism was because they told me there were no numbers involved, which was a
too,
big lure.
Man.
But
We're the same.
I was terrible at math. Is it fair, though? Is it fair that at the end of the year, someone else who has a natural affinity for numbers was able to win the math prize and I had to sit there and watch them get that prize?
Of course it's fair. What do you mean?
I know. Am I being facetious? I'm being facetious.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't picking up on that.
No, but under these rules, why would we say, wait, you have an affinity for numbers? Scott doesn't have an affinity for numbers. So what we have to do is level the playing field somehow because it has to be equal for everyone. Rather than saying, you know what? Your ability with numbers is spectacular. Please, let's direct you somewhere where they can be refined and worked on so you can do something amazing with your life.
And we used to do that as kids. I can remember distinctly that there were kids. There was a kid on our street who was a phenomenal baseball player. There was a kid who could throw a football a mile. And you know what we did? We knew that we celebrated them. We would go and watch their games or we would choose them to play pickup games with because we knew they were good and they knew it and we knew it. And we didn't go to bed every night feeling like our lives were over because we weren't as good as they were at something because we were good at something else.
Decided I want to be as good as that person and it was motivation to try and get there.
Exactly. That's the other part of it. I learned to throw a baseball from a baseball guy who was an expert on my street who was the same age as me. So there you go.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Area rating is one of those topics that is decidedly unsexy by name. A lot of people hear area rating and just tune out. The idea is back when amalgamation happened in the city of Hamilton, different wards got different things they were going to be taxed for because they didn't have certain services that other areas did. The old city didn't have some that the suburbs did and vice versa. Well, there is now a lot of discussion, and one of the mayoral candidates who has put his name in has argued that we should be getting rid of area rating in order to help pay for LRT, that those in the suburbs, those in Winona and Flamborough and Dundas and Ancaster and Stony Creek, they should be losing the area rating so that we all pay equally in this city to pay for the LRT. Good idea, bad idea?
Extremely bad.
Why?
Because I don't want the LRT.
Okay, so leaving that part aside for a second, assuming it's going to happen, do you still think it's a bad idea that everyone pays a fair share?
Well, I think we're getting long past the point of area rating being a good thing in our city. I do think that it's time to just kind of even the playing field out a little bit. Don't you?
No, not really. Okay. And mostly because, not because of whether I want it or not because whether my neighbor wants it or not because, but if you live in the very outskirts, there is almost a 0% chance that you will use this ever. And even getting to it is going to be.
I'm one of those people. I'm one of those taxpayers.
Right. And so here's the thing is I just was in Waterloo having an early Mother's Day lunch with my mom today. All right. And they have the LRT, whatever it's called. I can't remember the name that they call it out there, but the LRT. And at each end of the LRT, first of all, it travels from not just sort of in a line, as people say, from nowhere to nowhere. It's not exactly that here, but it goes from a big mall to a big other place where there's tons of parking at each end. So you could park somewhere, leave your car and jump on and get somewhere else. Here, right now, it looks like that's going to be difficult to do. The way you're going to have to get to the LRT is either by living on the line or close to it or taking public transit to the LRT. And if you live in one of those way outskirt places that doesn't have decent public transit to begin with to get you there, you're double kneecapped on this one. So why should you be paying more?
Because I hear you. But there's only one pot of dough, right? For the city, and the haves are always going to have to shovel a little bit to the have-nots. Meaning there's have areas of the city and there's have-not areas of the city. So at some point, with considering there's only one overall pot, I think you take a lot of conflict and stress out of things by just kind of evening it up a little bit. I know that's kind of an oversimplified view on it. And look, I'm one of the guys that won't be riding the LRT ever, likely. And I live in, you know, the most affluent area of the city and pay lots of taxes.
Here's why I don't completely agree with what you're saying. And I get the concept. Right. I do. Here's why I don't completely agree with it. And I've said this many times. If you buy a house and they build an airport next to you after you've bought the house, you have a legitimate gripe that suddenly there's all this noise and everything else. But if you buy a house next to an airport, you should not be complaining about noise because you knew what you bought. So if you bought a house in the suburbs specifically because you did not want to be in downtown Hamilton before amalgamation, dealing with all this stuff, paying more taxes for stuff like this, I look and I go, wait a second. I specifically, for reasons, didn't want to do that. Now, I know that it's blended. I know we've lost a lot of these things. I know a lot of these things have changed over the years. But public transit is a massive nut. It's a huge ticket that you are now going to get strapped with. And I just, as I say, I look at this thing and I think on this one, you got to be Missouri. Hamilton's got to be Missouri to the suburbs. You got to be the show me state and show me that public transit is going to improve before I decide I'm going to be willing to jump in and pay a lot for it, rather than telling me we're going to nail you with much bigger taxes right. with a promise that the bus service is going to improve. And then, you know what? I'm sorry. I have my doubts. I just do.
Look, I do too. I'm going more, my answer is going more on gut feel overall. But when we start to drill straight down onto transit, which is what you're talking about, I mean, I don't believe that trains are going to get built anyway. And I hope it doesn't. I hope it come, pardon all my cliches. I hope it comes off the rails again. I think it would be a horrible thing for our city. I really do. I've said that the whole way along. It pollutes the aesthetic of the cities in which it's in. I don't know what you thought of the aesthetic in KW or Waterloo, but I think it's ugly. All those posts and those wires for a cutesy looking little European train that nobody's going to ride. We don't ride trains here. You're right. The population of Hamilton is all up on the hill, pretty much, and you know, you can't drive a square peg into a round hole. We have an extreme love affair with automobiles that isn't going away anytime soon, unless somebody pries your steering wheel from your cold, dead hands.
Like, we'll see. You know? Well, there are some who would like that to happen, but you know, force you onto the LRT. That you will be held on the LRT against your will. It'll stand for, I don't know, we'll have to come up with the name, but something about, I don't know. We'll figure out what LRT could mean in that way.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
I want to get into this one with you because this is something that this may sound prudish in 2022. I don't know. But in the last few days, there has been a discussion going on in Ottawa because some are saying that the Prime Minister dropped an F-bomb during question period in the House of Commons. And
Buttle Duddle.
Well, not that one. Slightly shorter. So, you know, it is 2022. I get that. But is there anywhere these days that should be off limits to naughty language? Or are we at the point where we say, I don't care, say what you want to say wherever you want, because we no longer have any foibles or standards or anything about that kind of thing. We don't expect that you're going to respect a certain place without that kind of language. Or is it not a sign of disrespect now?
Interesting. I'm not a prude, and I've certainly dropped plenty of F-bombs myself, sometimes as many as 20 an hour. Depending on the mood I happen to be in.
I think 5 minutes.
Right. You know, time and place. for sure. And that's what you're asking about. What's the place? And so a couple of things come to mind. I don't think that that kind of language should ever be used in houses of parliament, where laws are debated and created, because we don't swear in courts of law in our country, or we're...
Why not?
Well, people do it, but they're admonished for it. Unless the words come out through the presentation of evidence, that if you're just in there and you drop an F-bomb out of context, then you're going to be admonished for it. And I think those, that shouldn't be happening. Trudeau shouldn't be, he should be more disciplined. If he did that, he should be more disciplined.
And the point of this debate is not whether or not he did or didn't. There's some dispute about that.
If he did, then
so I don't know if he did, but yeah.
He shouldn't have, and it's not okay. And in my view, decorum is important because it speaks to the seriousness of the business that goes on under that roof. The roof of Parliament, the roof of the courthouse downtown. Places of worship, I think. Same thing.
What about your office? What about your office? It's a professional environment. Presumably, it's a professional environment. But people do. At least they do in a lot of them.
They do, but again, I think when you get to professional environments, offices, then it's starting to loosen up at that point. It's always you got to judge your room, right? You got to judge the crowd you're with and what is kind of happening. That you've got to be able to quote read the room, except in those more formal places that I suggest we shouldn't be doing that in at all. I think I'm not afraid of curse words at all. I'm not afraid of any words, quite frankly. I think we're too afraid of all kinds of words, and we attach way too many different subjective meanings to different words. But the straight F-bombing and stuff like that, it's certainly becoming less shocking or even offensive.
It's absolutely far more accepted now as just a thing you're going to hear, and as a punctuation. And once upon a time, you would say, it's rude, or those of lower standards would use those words all the time. But now, it seems like it's very commonplace, basically everywhere. And I just look. Maybe I am prudish, but I just wonder if that really benefits us as a society to coarsen our language. To me, here's the thing. To me, Jamie, if you slam your thumb with a hammer, I get that you're going to say it. It's going to pop out. I get it. But if you're just doing it because you can, or because it's, whatever, to me, find a different word it's a weak mind. It's a non-creative mind. It's an easy one. Find something interesting to say. Find something that you can say that, I don't know. I don't do it because for a number of reasons, but one of them is I just think it's easy. It's way too easy.
I was just going to say, I think in a lot of cases, it's laziness. It's just laziness that we are not willing to search for a better word to use at that moment. And so we fall back onto it. I think that happens. I think that happens frequently. And it's so pervasive anymore in the media and in the stuff that we watch on television. There was a time when, man, if you heard somebody drop an F-bomb or, a number of other things, it would be shocked it was on TV. But the kids have it. They're doing it more than ever. I mean, you go stand in a schoolyard and you won't believe what you hear. Your ears will ache from what you're hearing. You think you're in a naval yard waiting for the sailors to ship out. Like it's crazy, but they're seeing it too in the written form on social media too. Right. So the more it permeates, all of our communication via different mediums, the more accepted it's going to become and the less shocking it's going to become. I'm sure back in Elizabethan times, there were words that were probably considered equally or more offensive that we today wouldn't even recognize or even know what the word is or meant. But at the, the use of that particular word at the time would have been so insulting to someone, you know, that they would have taken great offense to different words. And then yet those words aren't used anymore for any reason. You know, they fall out.
Yeah, I acknowledge. I mean, people can say that I'm being prudish by saying this, and that's fine. I don't mind that. There are things in society that just coarsen things, and make it seem like we're not trying, or that somehow we've decided that when you go on Twitter or whatever and drop an F-bomb, that somehow that shows that you're really edgy. And you want to know something? If everyone is doing it, it no longer makes you edgy. It's the opposite.
If everyone's doing it,
you not doing it would be edgy rather than you joining the crowd and saying, oh yeah, I did it too. That you're no longer unique. You're not edgy. That's what everyone does.
Now you're right. It sticks out more like a sore thumb now than ever. I notice when I watch stand-up comedians on Netflix, they have a lot of stand-up comedy. It's still there, but not at the levels that I remember comedians using it in the 1980s, believe it or not.
No.
Or no. 90s.
Well, Eddie Murphy made a career. And look, Eddie Murphy was hilarious in his stand-up routines. Yeah. No question about it. And he used it as every second word. And it was part of his shtick, honestly. It was. Same with others.
Yeah. But I've noticed that the F-bomb has become much more of a punctuation mark in stand-up comedy than a main course, you know?
How did you spell course?
Yeah, right. Your version, C-O-A-R-S-E, correct? Versus, yeah, I'm meaning C-O-U-R-S-E.
But you want to know something else, Jamie, about that? And it's a great point, I think, because if you go on YouTube, there is a channel called Dry Bar. And I don't know who puts it together. Anyway, it's a lot of comedians who are, I think the whole point is, I think it's at a dry bar, like a place where there's not booze being served.
Booze.
And there is no, that I've seen anyway, they all do their routines without any F-bombs or whatever else. And it's not less funny. And some of these comedians, when you see them on other places, it's not that they don't use the word. They do use the word. It's just in this context, they've worked around it. And you want to know something? It hasn't changed any of the funniness.
Well, Jerry's the best example of that. I mean, I think maybe the odd time, very odd time, he might use the F word. But 99.9% of the time, you don't hear it in any of his stuff, his stand-up stuff. Do you? No.
I don't recall.
Right. And you're absolutely right. The quality of the performance and the art is right there. It's there. So, yeah, I mean, I hesitate to mention another comedian who's a rapist named Bill Cosby, but he, back in his day, he was pretty good at doing comedy without dropping the F-bombs either.
Yeah, but so I guess
he's got a whole other set of problems.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? Since you've brought us to the comic world, and that's a good segue here. Let me finish with this tonight. Then, I don't know if you saw the video from earlier this week or the weekend. I'm not sure when it was, of Dave Chappelle being attacked on the stage. I think it was at the Hollywood Bowl. He was doing a thing, in Los Angeles, and somebody jumped on the stage with a fake gun, but that had a real knife stuck in the chamber, like it was a bayonet almost, but yeah. A pistol though, a real knife. And the person got stopped and got tackled and whatever before he could really do any damage to Chappelle. But a lot of people are saying, yeah, okay, this is exactly what you knew was going to happen after the Will Smith thing at the Oscars, that you were going to have copycats. But it goes back to something else beyond that to me, even Jamie, and it ties into Will Smith. Are we able anymore to take a joke? Because I'm not sure that we are now. I think that we now seem to think that if someone says something that we don't find funny, we're allowed to make them stop.
No. We've we're back to where we were near the beginning of the show. We are so under the influence of ultra liberal wokeness at this point that we have lost our collective sense of humor. No, we can't take a joke. We can't take any fun being poked at us. We won't dare A lot of us poked fun at anything, so that's a loss of sense of humor. No, we've collectively lost our sense of humor. It's ridiculous. It really is. It's off the charts. Just terrible. And
so,
yeah, sorry.
Is that fixed? Do you think so? You know, I've often wondered this when we go down this path, and I agree. I think some people,
by the way. He's great.
Well, I think some people can still take a joke at their own expense. There are still people who are fine with self-deprecating humor and even fine when someone pokes fun at them. But yeah. I think, but maybe it's fewer. But once that bridge has been crossed, can we cross back?
I hope so. Pretty tough. I'm feeling like cancel culture, for example, because it ties to this. I'm feeling like cancel culture's 15 minutes is just about up.
You think the pendulum will swing?
I think so. And believe it or not, I know we don't have time to talk about it tonight, and we haven't had time on the show, but the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial is a great microcosm of society. If people should tune in and check out, at least go on and check the clips out of how insane we've become as a society, and the wokeness and the fake Me Tooers is a big problem. There are fake Me Tooers.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, I mean Amber Heard is a complete fake. She's taking advantage of the Me Too movement to forward a false narrative, a set of lies against one individual, and it does a lot of damage to people who are legitimately victims of domestic violence. She's a terrible actress. She's a liar. There's no evidence. And people should take a look at that kind of stuff. I know we started on comedy and I've morphed it into this other thing. My point is we are so addicted to outrage. We are so polarized anymore in our points of view. And we are so... Not only are we addicted to outrage and can't wait to be outraged, but we have no ability to step back into the middle at all and view things from different points of view. And the essence to me of jokes and comedy is being able to see things from different angles and different points of view. Because when you do, sometimes you see the absurdity of things, and that becomes the funny part, you know? So
I know when you talk about the addicted to outrage, it's a really interesting turn of phrase, because I've known someone who we used to joke, as it turns out, they could not be happy unless they were angry. It was almost as if, and it was sort of a sad thing in a sense, but it was almost as if being happy, you didn't really feel anything. In order to feel something, the only thing that made them feel was that anger. And so you would be constantly looking for that thing that would give you some kind of feeling. And the addicted to outrage idea, I think there's something to that, that at least it makes us feel something that feels real to us.
It makes people who don't perceive themselves to have any power to feel powerful. That's why they jump all over social media feeds and they expound and they do the "oh God, ain't it awful" routine so often on their feeds, and they try to make themselves out to look like saviors of society, and they try to gather people up for that because it's a power thing, it's an attention seeking thing.
But if that's the case, knowing that someone's poking fun at something that you hold dear to you. So, right. You know what? Let it go, because you know what? Somebody who agrees with you is poking fun at something that someone else holds dear you think is hilarious. But why can we not simply say, live and let live? If I find that funny and someone else is going to be offended, I don't expect them to freak out about it because I think it's hilarious. So I've then got to let them have fun at my expense sometimes.
Right. And I mean, nobody said that you are supposed to walk through life and laugh at every joke that everybody tells, or nobody said that the rules are that every joke that a comedian tells has to be tasteful. You can tell a tasteless joke. Some people will find it funny and others won't. So what? Next? Like, we don't need to hunker down and start going nuts. by the way, the guy that jumped Chappelle, at least, you know, the other actors or comedians that were there jumped on the guy and some other people, and they you know, he got quite injured, apparently, the guy, for his effort. I think they broke his hands or something.
You know what, and I don't, and probably he'll, you know, he'll sue and try and win millions of dollars and say they overdid it and whatever else. And
yeah, good luck with that.
Anyway, no, I just, you know what, I Dave Chappelle to me is, I know you said you really like him. I'm kind of embarrassed to say this. I don't know that I've listened to more than 5 minutes of Dave Chappelle. Not that there's any reason for that. I just never have. I don't dislike Dave Chappelle. I've just never really got around to listening to him. But he's one of the guys who it seems is willing to step on some sacred cows, which is a sort of a mashed metaphor. Well,
he is. But if people should always look beyond the jokes too. If listen to what's being said between the lines in jokes with intelligent comedians like Chappelle. He is probably one of the top three most intelligent comedians that I've ever seen. But you have to listen to what he's saying between the lines and in the breaks of between his patter and the jokes, because there's a lot of messaging in there. And I didn't know much about the guy until the controversy started with him around the trans stuff. And I watched his stuff on Netflix and expected to hate it. And I loved it. And I loved it for the reasons I've just outlined. So I encourage everybody to take a look at it and make their own minds up for themselves. Maybe they'll hate it. Maybe they'll like it. Doesn't matter to me.
Well, make up your own mind. Just don't tell anyone or else you'll get attacked for having an opinion, I guess. Jamie
exactly.
West, always love having you on the show. Thanks for doing this. Where can people, by the way, tell people about your podcast and where people can find it and listen and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're wherever you get your podcast, you'll find us there, the Jamie West podcast. And we just put one up today, a new one up today that deals with health. So go and check that out anywhere that you get your podcast, the Jamie West podcast. You'll be finding us there a lot. So thank you, Scott. Always a pleasure to be here, my friend.
The Scott Radley Show, weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.